first, some serious disparities in sentencing for drug possession. If you're caught with 5 grams of crack cocaine, you could get 5 years in prison. But it takes 500 grams of powdered coke to draw the same sentence. Today, the Supreme Court took up this issue of sentencing disparities, and our legal analyst, Dahlia Lithwick of Slate.com, was there, and she's here now. Dahlia, how did the big gap in these sentencing guidelines occur?
Madeline, it largely was really attributable to a lot of misinformation in the 1980s when the crack phenomenon was sort of new and it was all bound up with the war on crime and the get tough on crime. There was just some misimpressions about what crack was, what it did, and a sense that it was far more lethal, far more dangerous, had much more pernicious effects in utero. And so at the time, the Sentencing Commission and the Congress decided to really crack down, so to speak, and go after crack all out of proportion to cocaine. Of course, what happened was this enormous disparity emerged where cocaine users who are primarily white got much, much lighter sentences than crack users who are primarily urban blacks. And so what we saw was this huge divide that began to happen, although now we see that crack and cocaine are, at least in terms of effect, fundamentally the same.
Mm-hmm. And Congress has tried to fix this over the years, right?
Well, the Sentencing Commission, who's in charge of promulgating these laws and overseeing them, has tried 4 different times to sort of realign the 100-to-1 disparity. They've put forth all sorts of different proposals, and Congress hasn't really budged to accommodate them. So what you started to have was a lot of district judges, sentencing judges, who said, I'm essentially going to take this into my own hands. I will say that the Sentencing Commission has made a tweak to the 100-to-1 ratio that will go into effect in November unless Congress stops it. So this is going to change a little bit, but this was, in some sense, judges sort of engaging in a little bit of self-help.
Well, tell us today about the cases that the court heard.
It was a pair of cases. One of them was sort of touched on this crack cocaine disparity. Both of them, the thing they had in common was that they were about the court's sentencing doctrine, which has kind of had a quiet revolution that culminated in about 2005 in the case of United States v. Booker. That was a case that said that the federal sentencing guidelines, they used to be mandatory guidelines, had become, quote, advisory. Really, the question has become now how advisory is advisory. And what the court has established as recently as last year, is that if judges stay within the guidelines, there's this presumption that the sentence is probably reasonable. What happens, though, this is the corollary question, when the judges deviate way out of the guidelines as the 2 cases today? So we saw one case that had a sort of Iowa college student selling a lot of ecstasy for a couple months in 2000, makes a whole bunch of money, withdraws from the conspiracy. The judge says, I'm not going to go with this pretty extreme 30 to 37 months of imprisonment under the guidelines. I'm going to go all the way down to probation, 3 years of probation, and he was overturned on the Eighth Circuit. The other case, as we've sort of hinted, had to do with a Virginia case. Again, someone who got a sentence that the judge just determined was way too extreme because he didn't really have a policy sense that the crack cocaine disparity was right. And so both of these cases come up as sentencing cases, asking again this very fundamental question. Look, if the sentencing guidelines are in fact advisory, if judges are allowed to deviate out, how much is too much advisory, how much is too much deviation, and how do we measure when judges have gone too far?
And Dahlia, this is the second day of the new term. Anything new from what you've seen in court so far?
Well, you know, interesting cases, certainly, Madeline, but I think the big news is all happening in the sort of gossip world. You know, we've seen a bunch of very, very explosive reports on what goes on behind the scenes at the courts. We had Jeffrey Toobin's big book that's just come out that tells us all sorts of backstory and scuttlebutt about what's going on. And then just yesterday, Justice Clarence Thomas's major book came out, his autobiography. And so I think in some sense, we now know an awful lot about the court that has nothing to do with footnotes and dictum and holdings, and a lot to do with, you know, personal reputations and revelations, and maybe even a little bit more than we really feel like need to know.
A little TMI there at the court. Dahlia Lithwick of Slate.com, thank you very much.
It's always a pleasure.
And there's more coming up on Day to Day from NPR News.